From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of November, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan O'Brien at K-State Extension. Jackie Vakes is out of the office today. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast, that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He'll take us in depth through Argentina and Brazil. Things are getting better, but maybe not for long. And we'll also discuss some of the strange things happening with the weather in Australia. And we'll do that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. December quarter today down 5.75 for this Wednesday afternoon. It settled at $4.20 a bushel. The March at 4.27.5, also a nickel lower. The May down 5.5 at 4.30 1/4, and July at 4.31 1/2 down 5 cents. And December of next year at 4.10 3/4, 1.5 cents lower. January soybeans at $11.84 down 7.25. Pay attention to these now. March 11.85 3/4, just a penny and 3/4 of a cent carry there, down 7.5 cents for that contract. May at 11.84, that's no carry from January to May, down 8. And July 11.79 3/4, down 8 cents. There's an inverse there. And November of next year down 6 cents at $10.50. Bean oil futures up 12 at 38.12, rather 38.18. Bean meal at 396.90, down $1.40. Wheat futures in the December 23 cents lower at 5.88 1/4. July at 5.97, down 15. December hard red down 17 1/4 at 5.43 3/4 in July. The harvest month down 19 3/4 at $5.60 1/2. Live cattle futures for the day. December contract at $111.37 1/2, up 20 cents. Feeder cattle in the January at $140.17 1/2, $1.57 1/2 higher for the day. And lean hogs at $66.17 1/2, 87 1/2 cents higher. Crude oil futures, 80 cents a barrel higher at $45.70. Ethanol futures down 4 cents at $1.37. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2 6/10 of a cent higher at $1.38 6/10 of a cent per gallon. And gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price today at $1.28 6/10. That's 2 8/10 of a cent higher. Natural gas at $2.89 8/10 of a cent, up 12 3/10 of a cent. The Dow, that's down about 195 points at 29,808. And the dollar is down 0.201. It's at 92.01. Dan O'Brien is now here from K-State Extension. Dan, thanks for being with us again today. There's a pretty good break in the wheat market as we talk during the 11 o'clock hour today. What's happening there?
Well, you know, in the broader context, you've got, we've had concerns or lack of concerns, depending on which governmental report we listen, either government or industry reports we hear of coming out of the Black Sea region. Just within the last days, you had, I think I call it the fog of the wheat market, and that you almost grow numb to, and that someone from a minister from Ukraine said, oh, we're gonna harvest 65 million metric tons of grain this year, and that would be down. But then the Russian counterpart made a statement about raising their amount of exports all that much higher. So to me, I think that the actual proof of what they actually have trails the public statement. So it doesn't surprise me coming into a holiday weekend that with the negative statement, perceptively anyway, negative statement out of the Russian market, that Russian government about strong exports, that would have somewhat of a negative impact on the market. You know, stand back and look at the wheat market, whereas we're very tight in the U.S. for soybean supplies, and tight in the world market, corn tightening up. When you look at the world wheat market, you know, you're still looking at 35, 36, 40% ending stocks to use that are projected. I think they had that latest, that November 10th number came in and said 44% stocks to use in the world. And if you take China out of that with their large stocks, you're still at 25% stocks to use. And here, when we talk about the tightness in say world corn markets for stocks use, we're looking at a world number. The world number is 25%. Take China out, it's down to 11. And for soybeans, again, the world number with China in is about 23-24%, and about that too. Again, China doesn't have a lot of soybean stocks other than what they buy. They do produce some. So the wheat market, that it's had strength in Canada. I'll be honest, from my point of view, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a gift because we have some dry conditions. We're concerned about that, but gee whiz, the world wheat market still has a lot of wheat around, and we're it's a lot more abundant supplies in wheat than we have for those other major commodities.
What you told me is that it means that corn, if it ends up in short supply, for instance, out of South America and the safrinha crop in particular, because that's the one they export. But even where they were short supplied of corn because of last year's crop, that front end crop, it has to do a lot of heavy lifting because it not only has to, you know, lift the corn itself, but it has to lift up what is a competitive feed grain that's really widely available.
Well, there aren't that many places in the world that have exportable supplies. Of course, and we've talked about in Brazil, and again, they have drought concerns. Argentina, off and on concerns as well. Ukraine, and we just talked about Ukraine, the wheat crop in the wheat market, and the same dry conditions affecting wheat have an impact on prospects for their other crops, including corn. So just an interesting world supply demand scenario, and maybe probably the most valuable chart that I look at each week, and all grain market analysts look at, is our drought indices. You know, if we produce the crop, we seem to be able to use it, or we'll store it for another year, but we've got dry conditions in key areas of the world that produce these crops, for key exporters, and that's not the only factor affecting these markets. But boy, it's a big one. So here we have Dease corn trading around 420, 425, something like that, and it wasn't that long ago that we were wondering if we were ever going to break over 350, but at all given. Conditions we had at times in the last year. Soybeans jumped up 1185 or so, 1180, 1190. And again, we not that long ago, we were looking at times, below 11 for sure, and wondering about 8 and 9 in the fall. And for hard red wheat, 548 and a half. And most hardened Kansas wheat producers look at that futures price and say, gosh, that's $5.50. We've been concerned about 325 at times here recently. So I think overall dry conditions around the world a number of factors have led us to a situation where we have pretty strong prices. When you try to look at this there are ag indices that mainly focus on agricultural, again, grains, livestock, and they've been strong S&P GSCI Agricultural Index of ag commodities had been as low in April and May as about 255. As we talk now, a little bit of a trailing, a few days trailing calculation, 338. So that, gosh, from 338 of where we're at compared to 255, that's up a third. That's amazing. The overall CRB index, though, which has those ag products in it, but also has a good amount of energy numbers, that was down to, in their scale, during that same April, May timeframe, 101 was the low. Well, now it's up to 159. So I think that particularly with China's influence on the markets and some dryness in some key areas, that in general, the ag markets have moved up stronger than many other markets. Stock markets, of course, of late have been tremendous, but ag commodities moved up with more strength than the energies. And that's thought provoking and probably puts our, a major part of our ag sector, the bioenergy sector, probably, well, they look at this with some wariness, I guess. Again, you and I, as we've talked recently on different shows, we've looked at what's happening to the price of ethanol, and that's really kind of, well, in Kansas now it's $1.23. We were at $1.40 not too long ago, and again, in the Eastern Corn Belt, you're much higher than that. You're 135, 140 thereabouts, but you've been higher than that too. So what's my point? My point is higher commodity prices are good, but we have to be cognizant of what higher corn, grain, sorghum, soybean input prices do to these use industries. And if anything, there's a little bit of a constraint as to how high we can go on the grain prices and not start to affect the usage industries.
I have a different kind of question for you here. Is this a leading indicator of potential inflation?
There are fears of that. If the input prices go higher, and the break evens move up in these industries, then the first response is for those plants to keep going, but then to cut back some. Keep going as long as they can. But if they're losing money, then they start to cut back. And then we're going to test demand. If users still want those commodities coming, they want food products, energy products, all continuing to go forth, then you start to bid up and you see that inflation. What's the old definition of inflation that our best economists have talked about? It's more money chasing less goods. and we'll see where that goes.
Well, on that note, the market has, in all three, wheat, corn, and soybeans, gotten rid of the carry. What does that tell us?
Well, that is most pronounced in soybeans. No carry. The January contract, as we speak, somewhere around it. Well, speaking, kind of looking forward as to where we're at without major changes over the next week or so. January is about 1 or 2 cents less than March, but after that, we start to go sideways and then to tail off pretty dramatically. So no carry, in essence, limited to no carry in soybeans. So that's a market that wants soybeans up front. For corn, we've got a little bit of carry from the D's to the March contract, but we're basically, we're standing on the verge of delivery, if not there, for D's corn. So we're shifting over to March already in terms of the volume on the contract. So from March, you have just a little bit of carry into May, sideways into July, and then you're going down into harvest. So with no carry in either corn or soybean futures to speak of, you're giving no signal to store that those markets are saying we want grain now. I guess our Illinois and Kansas farmers will have decisions to make. The market is telling them to sell. Yeah, that's what it's telling them. And if they hold contrary to that, they may be well rewarded. But boy, there's not 3, 4, 5, 6 cents carry in either one of those markets that would encourage any storage.
Dan, thank you. I appreciate you taking so much time with me today.
Todd, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's Dan O'Brien. He is with Kansas State Extension. And next Tuesday, we'll kick off the 5 webinar series for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. It's a little different this year because we're going virtual, and we didn't want to go all day long, or at least all morning long as usual. Normally, we're at 5 different cities across the state of Illinois. This time around, you can stay home and join us by webinar. You can sign up right now. Registration this year also different because, well, it's free. Sign up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can do that online at willag.org. willag.org, or if you prefer, go straight to the farmdocdaily.illinois.edu website. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thank you for being with us. I hope you're looking forward to a great Thanksgiving holiday.
Yes, indeed. There's nothing I like better than turkey.
Well, there'll be plenty of turkey around, I'm sure. I do want to talk about a turkey, though, which is the weather conditions in South America. They've not been great for farmers there. For farmers that have a crop to sell, like those in North America, not so bad. But if you're trying to put one in the ground or trying to get one to move through the growing season, not great. Have things gotten better or worse over time?
Well, I guess it really depends on where you are in South America. Some areas are definitely worse, and others are definitely going to be better over this coming week. We've got quite a bit of rain headed for some of the drought-stricken areas in Argentina, as well as Uruguay and Rio Grande do Sul in southern Brazil, and also southern Paraguay. Over this next 7 days, by the time we chat next week, we should have seen at least a fair amount of moisture in all of these areas, and that's really going to help a lot with the late season planting that's still underway, as well as the better development in early season crops across those areas. Now, this is not a trend changer, even though the moisture is going to be fairly good. We saw something like this occur in the latter part of October. And it was, again, at the same time, one of those saving grace type events where there was definitely a big benefit from the moisture, and they were allowed to plant a lot of crop that they were fearing they weren't going to get planted at that time. The same kind of thing is going to occur from this event. But we're going to fall right back into some more dry weather in about 10 days, and everything's going to look a lot like La Nina from that point forward. So eastern Argentina, Uruguay, southern Paraguay, and southern Brazil will be back into a dry weather mode. But before that happens, we're going to get enough moisture that these crop areas are going to really look a lot better a week from now. Now, the rest of Brazil, it's the other side of the coin, and things are going to look a lot worse a week from now for many areas in center west and center south Brazil, even northeastern Brazil. Some of these areas got a fair amount of rain a week to week and a half ago, and really helped crops quite a bit. But we're done with that, and they are drying down, and will continue to dry down through at least the middle part of next week, if not all the way through the end of next week. And so it's going to be really important that they get some second week December rain, and we're watching closely for that. I think they will get it. But it is going to be a little slow getting started, and there's going to be a little fear in the marketplace for a while. So we're going to be watching pretty closely. I don't believe we've crossed any line in Argentina or Brazil where we have done permanent damage to production potentials, but we keep walking on very thin ice. So it's going to be really important to see what happens over these next 10 days.
In La Nina, it remains the big trend in those areas?
Yes, La Nina still has control over South America to a large degree. The monsoon flow in Brazil is typically delayed when we have a La Nina event. Well, the one thing that makes this particular growing season a little bit different is that typically by the time we get to the end of November, the monsoon is going. This is the first time in my 41-year career that I have seen no monsoon development over the 2 months together. And so that is a very big issue. But La Nina will usually go ahead and allow that monsoon to develop. And we are seeing changes now in northern South America that I think will lead to improved weather in the second half of December.
I understand from our conversations that this delay is not the only anomaly that you see in the southern hemisphere, and that in Australia there are some strange things happening as well.
That's right. And typically, La Nina in Australia brings good rains to Queensland and New South Wales, and they usually have an awesome year in their dryland cotton and sorghum production areas. And it has been many years since they were able to have a successful crop in those areas. And the problem is it rained really nice in early October, and I think some of these producers got out and planted early. it hasn't rained much in the last few weeks. The month of November has seen 20 to 40% of normal precipitation, and we have already seen two heat waves occur across the eastern part of the country, and a third is going to occur starting tomorrow and going through the middle of next week, temperatures getting into the 100 to 113 degree range. Those areas that are dry land cropped are going to once again take it on the chin, and they're probably going to lose some of that early planted crop. It's not too late, though, for them to plant again. And they will probably do that, but we're going to have to wait for rain to evolve. And there is nothing on the chart right now for at least the next 10 days. So I think, like Brazil, we're probably going to have to wait until the second half of this month for an adjustment in the atmosphere so that they can start seeing better rain.
And finally, here in the United States, maybe a quick Thanksgiving forecast if you want. And in particularly the hard red winter wheat growing regions, how are they progressing?
Well, first of all, it doesn't look too bad for the holiday. We are going to have a lot of rain moving across the heart of the Midwest, so that'll be a little bit disruptive, but there's no big snow events, so that's good news. And in the hard red winter wheat country, we did get kind of stiffed a little bit with precipitation overnight last night. We did get up to 16 hundredths of an inch of moisture in Colorado and western Kansas, but still far, far short of what they need.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great holiday.
Well, you too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy Thanksgiving. Here's a list of turkey facts you might find of interest. Ben Franklin, did you know, in a letter to his daughter, proposed the turkey as the official United States bird. The average American eats about 16 pounds of turkey every year. 88% of Americans surveyed by the National Turkey Federation eat turkey on Thanksgiving, and 46 million turkeys are eaten each Thanksgiving, 22 million on Christmas, and 19 million turkeys at Easter. The average weight of a turkey purchased at Thanksgiving is 15 pounds. The heaviest turkey ever raised was 86 pounds. That's about the size of a large dog. A 15-pound turkey usually has about 70% white meat and 30% dark meat. The male turkey is called a tom. Tom turkeys have beards. And the female turkey is called a hen. Now, the turkey was domesticated in Mexico and brought to Europe in the 16th century. Turkeys lived almost 10 million years ago. In 1920, U.S. turkey growers produced one turkey for every 29 people in the United States. Today, growers produce nearly one turkey for every person in the country. Male turkeys gobble. Hens do not. They make a clicking noise. Wild turkeys can fly for short distances, at about 55 miles an hour, and can run 20 miles an hour. Turkeys are believed to have been brought to Britain in 1526 by a Yorkshire man. He acquired six turkeys from American Indian traders and sold them for tuppence in Bristol. Henry VIII was the first English king to enjoy turkey, and Edward VII made turkey eating fashionable. The five most popular ways to serve leftover turkey are in a sandwich, stew, chili, or soup, casseroles, and as a burger. Hey, you have a great Thanksgiving. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.